it's recording.
Yes. Perfect.
Okay, good. Awesome. So we probably, hopefully we didn't use up all our good material, though.
Oh, no, there's lots.
So, now I got to think of something to say. I got some Thunder Funk. So I'll introduce the podcast. So I'll just do it properly. So this is Sean-O-Rama's Sean Geek podcast episode, who knows what. And I get Danny Roy, my cousin, the guitar tech for Big Sugar, which is so cool, on the show. That's your introduction. That's all I got.
How's it going?
It's going very well. And you?
Going great.
So we tried to do this before, and I forgot.
we had a technical malfunction.
We just did earlier. Yeah. So,
the studio engineer dropped the ball.
Yeah. what I wanted, I actually had some questions. So one of the questions was the infamous second album of Thunderfunk. Will it ever see the light of day?
Well, actually we did a reunion show, a while ago, and then printed a bunch up, and then we had some left over, but no one seems to know where they went. The drummer thinks that the singer had them at his house, and then the singer thought the drummer had them. And then, honestly, it just slipped my mind to check into that. But I was thinking about it the other day, and yes, I definitely want to release it properly. Cause like I said, we did like a very small, CD release kind of thing. But yeah, absolutely digitalize it, because it's just still on CD, but I should put it online and have it, because it's a great record. I'm really, really, really proud of it. I think it's really good.
Well, you did play some of the tracks for me when I went home at some point or something along those lines. Like, I did hear some stuff off of it.
Yeah.
I can't remember how or when that was, because I don't go home that often. But I somehow heard it somewhere with you, probably in your house or room or something.
It was, yeah, I'm right. It was in my house for sure, downtown Moncton on Victoria Street. I still remember in the living room where I worked for. Yeah, I still remember letting you listen to it. And then after we went out, after that, but yeah, I remember letting...
Okay, so was that the night we went out and got shit-faced?
Yes.
So that was for my grandmother Dora's funeral, probably, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it would have been, probably. And I don't know if you remember, but the Gibson guitar ref was out with us, too.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Remember that? He was in town, and my boss wanted me to take him out and show him a good time, so we brought him along with us.
Oh, my God. Yes, I remember that now. Holy shit. Wow, good memory. All the Moncton trips kind of blur all into one now for me. Like, I can't, so there was one time we went to the bar, I think you were there, and didn't we not run into the guitar player or bass player for someone that was playing either that night or the next night in Moncton? Oh.
I don't know. That doesn't really ring a bell, but.
I remember the bar we were in.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called, but I remember what it looked like. I remember like going up the stairs and stuff.
Yeah, it was Fat Tuesdays,
Was that Fat Tuesdays? Okay.
Yeah.
And then the guy came and talked to me, and he thought I was someone else. And that's how that conversation went. I think, I don't know, all us bald guys, I guess, look the same, but he started talking to me, and then I think I'm assuming it was you, you're like, oh, well, that's the guitar player in, the girl, she had long, big, thick hair. She had a song called, not Amsterdam, but Amanda Marshall.
Oh, Amanda Marshall. Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah.
And it was the guitar
totally right.
player, the bass player that was there. I can't remember which one it was.
They were playing in town, and I actually went to that show. They were playing at the Coliseum.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I can't remember if that was the, I don't know if that was the same visit or that's even that same night. It might have been.
Yeah, I'm almost positive it is.
Yeah. See, my brain works a little bit. So
yeah, okay. No. So the Thunderfunk album, definitely, it's not forgotten. It actually is. It is planned to be actually just released online. Just for all to have and enjoy.
Awesome. Are you gonna think you're gonna do it on like SoundCloud or what? How are you?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, probably SoundCloud. Yeah, just make. I was actually thinking of doing like a compilation.
Okay.
Because we have like a demo that was like an EP that was only on cassette.
I have it. Songs. Yeah, I have it.
Yeah. So there's songs that's
got Muff and Fluff in there, and
yeah.
So that stuff there off that cassette. Do you have digital copies of that?
No, not at all. It's never been transferred.
Do you need digital copies of that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I will make them for you.
Okay.
I have the technology.
That's not my forte.
No, that's mine. I can do stuff like that with my eyes closed. So I actually picked up, because my first three cassettes were never transferred to digital. So I picked up a cassette. It's like it looks like a Walkman, and you plug it into your computer and it will do a conversion for you.
Oh yeah. Cool.
So I converted my first three cassettes of, you know, my solo stuff or whatever you want to call it. I converted it all to MP3, which is pretty cool. Cool in that I did it, not so cool in that now people may be able to hear these songs, which I'm not too crazy about sharing. So,
well, unfortunately, in the entertainment business, you have to let yourself be seen naked.
Yes.
Be appreciated sometimes.
Yeah, true enough. So Thunderfunk was like the band. Did you have a band before that? Like, I remember you sent me a video of you guys playing Kiss and playing, a bunch of stuff. Like, was there any original material that came out of that stuff, or was it just covers?
No, that was just covers. That was our high school, grade, 10th grade band kind of thing.
Yeah.
10, 11. We were called Distorted Illusions.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a name. Okay, Distorted Illusions?
Yeah.
Cool.
I
still have that video cassette at home.
Really, eh?
I still do.
I don't know if I had that. I'm sure I'd be somewhere, but you never know.
I think Todd, or if you don't have it, need a copy, I have the means of converting that, I think.
I'm terrible for that stuff. Like, even when you're asking if I had, like, digital versions of stuff, for some reason, you don't seem to think that you're just moving forward, and you don't seem to think that what you just did, or, you're going to want, not that you're not going to want it later, but.
No, but at the time you don't think, yeah.
Yeah. I've always just kept trying to move ahead and do something different, and what's next and what's next and what's next. But now as you get older and you realize that, media, formats are changing, and, we have a bunch of Thunderfunk, concerts, and shows and stuff on VHS that need to get flipped over before they deteriorate, and all the, the quality goes out the window, right? So stuff like that, so that would be great for sure.
Yeah, do you want me to look into see if I can do it?
Yeah, totally. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. I don't have any Thunderfunk, but I do have that high school band. You sent me a video. You and I were sending videos back and forth at one point. I think you sent me like three different videos. I think I sent you videos too. Did I not? Or
yeah, you did.
I have no idea what I put on those things.
The memories. You remind me of stuff. Yeah, but which is great. Which is what I love. I love when someone, Turtle, the bass player in The Divorce, he for some reason he remembers stuff. So he'll tell stuff about a certain tour or a certain venue or a certain gig or a certain something, and it's like, man, I totally forgot about that. But then I'll tell him something he forgot about, and then the drummer will remember something. You know what I mean? So it's cool that way to be able to experience, things with multiple people, because even though you forget, like you said, everyone's memory works different. Someone else may remember,
Well, yeah, in that episode I did with Todd, where we're going back and remembering our youth, or the Burton Cummings episode or whatever. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, like... We had an episode where we talked about, growing up and going to that guy's house that had all those records, and It's like I remember it fondly a particular way. He remembered it fondly a different way. And you kind of put the two stories together. It's like, oh, man. Like, it has more relevance after.
Well, the classic, I won't go too deep into that, but the classic version of that is Motley Crue, The Dirt. Because that's what's so magical about that book.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have four different stories of everything. So it's great because one person will remember it a certain way and the other person will be like, you know, name four different people that were there that the other person didn't even mention.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? So it's awesome that way because it triggers memories and even us just going through memory lane right now, stuff I forgot about, that's like, as soon as you mention it, oh my God, yeah, that's right, you know?
I did get to see Thunderfunk play once, by the way. And it was
really?
A trip I made home. I can't remember what trip it was. I honestly can't remember. But I was there. I was there, and I think it was like two nights before I had to go home. Maybe I was there with my ex or something. Because we went home once. Because I remember the timing was like perfect. Like, oh my God, I'm going to get to see Danny's band. Like, I'm super, you know, super stoked. Because I love seeing family play. Like, I don't care who it is. And I don't care if it's good. I'm just excited to see family play. It's
absolutely.
It's very important to me. Like the video, like mom and dad and Uncle Paul and, you know, and all that, like that stuff. Like, that was cool to watch too. Like you played on there too. And
yeah,
I don't think Turtle was playing, but the other guitar player from the Divorcees was there.
Jaybird. Yeah.
Yeah. Jaybird. Yeah.
There.
Like I still have that on my computer. I still watch it, you know, from time to time. I just love watching my dad play. Like,
well, and that was so cool for me because you see pictures when you're young and you hear stories like, you know, Paul, I would just get mesmerized by the stories Paul would tell me because he was the real deal. He was the musician.
The real deal.
He bought his house with from playing music. He, you know, played six nights a week. Like, you know, like
he was a professional working musician.
Absolutely.
The only one I'd ever really known.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's what it kind of came down to. The only one that I knew that I wasn't reading about, it was actually someone I was connected to in my small little town that did that.
Yeah.
So it kind of showed that, oh, actually, that happened here, too. It wasn't just in L.A. Mm-hmm. and New York and, you know, this is happening everywhere. That's so wicked, you know. Music was that important, you know. Yeah, that show was really neat to be able to play with, you know, aunts and uncles who were part of the, you know, the not the golden years of music, but realistically, you know, the
scene in Moncton back in the day.
Yeah, totally.
Call it the scene. When I say the scene, I actually mean that scene every time because to me that's, I grew up with that and like hearing the stories I don't know, like that was the scene for me. That was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, yeah, so you got to play with Uncle Paul.
Yep.
So, like, that must have been a dream come true.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was awesome. Even with your mom. I'd never played with your mom before. And Monette, like,
was that,
you know,
whoa,
like,
what,
I ended up playing with her a little bit later, but.
Whoa, was that the first time you played with my mom?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the first time with Monette?
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, my God, I had no idea.
Yeah. That was major first. And then Monette she hired me to do some shows with her choir. They do like throughout the year, they changed the theme of it and it was a Greece kind of rock and roll theme.
Okay.
So she called me up and she wanted to play some guitar. So that was great. So I did that. But that was the first for playing with all those people.
Oh man. Oh, that must've been, yeah. I only get to play with mom once. Still to this day, I've only got to play with mom once. And that was at, it was mom and dad's anniversary party. And, they had the instruments set up. Like mom and dad were in a band called Pieces of Eight at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like more country than anything and country and Eagles and kind of stuff like that. It wasn't what mom wanted to do, but whatever. It's what dad wanted to do. So that they did that. And, so Dick was the drummer in that band, and then so he had his drums set up in the basement, and then I don't know who asked, but someone at some point said, well, you got the whole frickin' family here, and everyone plays different instruments. Why don't you play? And we played. So I sat behind the kit. I played the drums. Todd played the guitar. Dad played the bass. Mom sang, and Uncle Paul played keyboard. And they did. We did one song. We did House of the Rising Sun. And holy shit, was it cool?
Yeah. Oh, there's Yeah.
So I actually got to play with like all the people I had wanted to play with, you know, up to that point. And it's like, but I've been bugging Mom. Like, Mom's been recording stuff, as you know. Like, mm-hmm. you've listened to some of that stuff.
Oh, she sends it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, that's a dream come true for me. Like, I've been, Todd and I have been pushing her for, you know, the last 30 years to record something. And now she's doing it. So very, very excited about that. I'd still like to perform with her. Like, the drummer keeps saying, well, bring her to the studio, like, get her to sing a background or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she keeps, you know, flip-flopping. But I'm going to make it happen, man. Going to make it happen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Do it.
Yeah.
No, that's the kind of stuff that really connects. I mean, it's weird because growing up in the 80s, my perception of music and the music scene and how the 60s were and the 70s and then the 90s, and then you kind of, I didn't really realize that it wasn't that long ago, you know, the mid-60s, early 60s, yeah. mid-50s, you know, when rock and roll really started, wasn't that long ago at that point.
Yeah.
And now that we're, you know, let's say 60 years later, 50, 60 years later, and it's kind of, it's, you can kind of see that that was really the lifespan of it. And even though I didn't realize that I was in the middle of it, I was part of that, you know.
Part of that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but you think it's going to go on forever. And you think that 30 or 20 years ago, especially when you're in your teens, you think it's forever ago. You don't realize that it was just, you know, 20 years ago, you know, you don't even know what 20 years is at that point. So, it's being able to play and chat and, with people who were part of that scene, to me is just like, you can't replace that because it's going to be gone. It's going to be people that were involved in all that. We're seeing it happen now. Everyone's going on about how everyone's dying and everyone's dying and like in the music scene and all that.
Yep.
Well, yeah, of course, because that was 60 years ago.
Yeah. It's like, it's this epidemic. Well, it's not, they're just getting on in age.
Exactly. And since, you know, like rock and roll and pop and R&B and blues as we got to know it is done. We're just regurgitating the same stuff now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
except for Dome. Except for Dome. We're inventing new shit. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean that in a very, you know.
No.
I just mean as far as a nostalgic music. We're seeing the end of all those people. They're passing on or they're retiring or that album that you listened to countless times when you're a teenager is now classic, you know, it's 25 years old. You're like, what? How did that happen?
I know. That's weird.
So what I'm getting is, is being able to still be able to interact with people that were there and did it back then and were part of it and saw it change and experienced all the changes, you know. It's still great. I take advantage of any time. That's one of my favorite things about the Big Sugar Guitar Technique thing is after the show, you know, just listening to stories, you know, about, you know, hitting the scene in the 80s and in the 90s and, you know, hanging out with Randy Bachman and hanging out with Chris Robinson and hanging out with Warren Haynes and hanging out just, you know, stories like that, you know, it's just awesome. I can't get enough of that because, I've been obsessed with that whole thing and that whole era of music my entire life. So it's great to hear, still be able to hear real accounts, not a story of a story.
Yeah.
You know, not so-and-so told me, you know.
Yeah.
This same stuff that Uncle Paul could tell you, same stuff that your mom could tell you, same stuff that Mama could tell us, you know. Like, they were there, they did it, you know.
I think I wish I could get Uncle Paul on my show. But I can't.
It would be, a wealth of, again, because it was Moncton, New Brunswick. It wasn't New York. It wasn't Montreal. It wasn't Toronto. So it would have been different, but the same.
Yeah.
But to have someone that was but that's, that busy scene, and this, that sawed off, you know.
But that scene was big, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I, talking to my mom about it, I was like, wait, I think it's way bigger than I thought it was. Like, I, you know, well, you think it's Moncton, how big could it have been? Well, it was big, like you heard the story about Uncle Mike in Chicago, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
They're like, that's not small potatoes.
Well, you know? The thing is a lot of people have a stereotype of kitchen party Maritimes. You know, and it's because, well, they were poor and they had nothing else to do, so they would just play music. They don't they don't realize that it was, well, yeah, of course, it was Celtic and traditional music. And,
yeah, sure,
and,
there's lots
but
of that,
it was also, but it was in all kinds of music. It was in country, it was in rock, it was in blues, it was the same concept. People were broke. People didn't have really much to do. It was a small, you know, small population towns and villages and stuff. So it's the same idea. They just got together and played music, and they learned to play, and the brothers played, and the dad played. And, but it wasn't just the stereotype of what the rest of Canada and the rest of the world, for that matter, think. It was in all genres of music. It didn't stop at, you know, Celtic or traditional, you know.
Yeah.
So tons of amazing musicians. I've always said that. I don't mean that to no disrespect to anyone else across the country. But you notice when you leave the Maritimes, you can see the difference in the talent, in the level, how should I say that, in the quantity of amount of high-end musicians in the Maritimes versus everywhere
good
else.
Good point.
It's very noticeable when you leave, you know, and I'm not saying that there's no amazing musicians in all the other
it's
cities
just,
or provinces.
Yeah, if per capita though.
Oh, per capita, it's through the roof, you know. So and that's something that, you know, a lot of Maritimers are proud of, East Coasters, whatever you want to say, proud of, and they should be, because it's, you know, I saw it on Cover Me Canada. You know, I could see it, you know, everywhere you go, you can see that people, you know, even there, like when we first got there to Toronto and then CBC Studios and stuff, and you just kind of felt they had that, oh, you know, some country bumpkins from the East Coast, you know, it's when they were getting Mike or guitar player to go in and do studio stuff at night, they could have called anybody they wanted to in Toronto, and they were getting this guy they'd never heard of before because they couldn't believe how good he was, you know, to go in and do overdubs and to go in to do, you know, a lot of the Kevin Canada background stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he had to show a dude from Chilliwack how to play that solo.
Oh, no way.
You know,
that's cool.
Because he hadn't played it in so long. Yeah. And actually, he went in the studio at night, recorded it the day of the taping, showed him how it went. He rehearsed it a few times, and then we did the show. No one would ever know or even think about that.
Sure.
You know? So, again, just going to show that I'm very proud of East Coast talent, and it's the passion, you know. A lot of people you meet, you can tell why they get into music, and that does not exist as much on the East Coast. They get into music for most parts because of it was around, it was fun, it's tradition, it's just in the blood. It's of course, it's always to meet girls or meet guys or to stroke your ego a little bit or to, you know. But it was, you know, you can always tell an East Coast musician versus, you know, the rest of Canada and the rest of the world. Well, again, so not better or worse. There's just a certain thing about it.
So here's the thing I've noticed, like, you know, having been out of the Maritimes for quite a while, is in a place like this, now, this is alien to you and me, completely alien, but there's some people that don't listen to music at all. And that's the craziest concept.
I can't even
grasp
that.
Even when music isn't playing, there's still a soundtrack going on in my head, like, all the time.
Absolutely.
Like, there's always a beat, there's always something. So, but I talk to a lot of people, like, in Winnipeg is a pretty big city, there's actual, like, I talk to people, it's like, why are you so passionate about the music thing? I'm like, how are you so dispassionate about music? Like, how can you not, like, how can you drive and not put the radio on at the very least?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they put the radio on, but they want to listen to something that isn't good. Like, I don't want to get into the song. I'm not interested in getting into a song. I'm like,
no,
oh my
it's
God.
Just background. It's just background.
But they can't even, like, get into a song. Like, how can you not have, like, for me, if I wrote my biography right now, every chapter would have, like, this song or that band or that concert or that show or, and, like, a lot of people, they just don't have that. It's a sports reference or something.
Yeah.
And, like, it boggles my mind.
And a lot, you know, obviously that falls on their upbringing, what their household was like. You know, we had music at my house all the time. Like, you know, I remember certain album covers. I remember certain, hearing certain songs from, you know, parties at, you know, 2:30 in the morning, you'd wake up and you'd hear certain music being played. It was not always the same style of music. It was never, you know, but it was, that didn't matter. It was, as soon as you walked in, music was on.
Yep.
That was just the basis.
Yeah,
of it,
you get up, you turn the radio on, or you turn a record on, or a tape, or whatever it was. Like.
And, you know, how fortunate are we, you know, to have that as an upbringing, you know, because, you know, I can see, you can tell the difference in a person's character who is not into music, or music is just not important.
Yeah.
It's just not, whatever, you know, whatever's on the radio, you know, whatever, I have a few greatest hits records. And again, it's not any way to disrespect these people. It's that they just had a completely different, they wouldn't be able to put themselves in our lives, or would we be able to put ourselves in their lives, you know?
Yeah.
It's different strokes, of course, for everybody, but I count my blessings all the time that that music was a big part of, even though it was not professional, but music was a big part of my household. It was not encouraged, but it was not discouraged. It was one of those.
It's just there.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
So I have another thing I wanted to say, too, was I know we're digressing, but I don't care. So there was a conversation at work that I was overhearing. Like, I work in a cubicle farm, right? And there was a conversation that was happening about these two managers or whatever. They got comped some free tickets for a show, for some concert. I don't know who it was. It's not really relevant who it was. But I guess the performer was, like, having an off night or something. And so, A, they never paid for the tickets. It was corporately paid by someone else. And it was a show they didn't really want to go to, but they had to take some clients out to it. They're hockey fans, and they don't care about music. They just, hockey, sports, 24/7, that, you know, why would you spend your time listening to music when you could watch a game, sort of types of people?
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking this poor performer down and talking about how horrible she was, and all this sort of stuff, and how she was having a bad night. And I know for a fact that that singer was sick, and I don't remember who it was at this point, but, and she had to really push her way just to get through the show. And they said, and they made a comment along the lines of, you know, if you're going to be on a stage, you better be professional about it and all this. And I'm like, it really upset me, because, like, you have no concept of what music is and being a performer is, and writing songs and performing them and going on stage and playing, you know, 200 dates a year, and then you're going to have one bad night. And I'm sure it wasn't that bad,
mm-hmm.
but, like, people who don't play music or ever listen to music criticizing a musician, I just felt wrong.
Well, it's funny, because when you started off, if they were sports people, and the way you were describing how they were analyzing and critiquing whoever this artist was is so perfect, because that's what sports people do. And again, I am not I'm not trying to disrespect anybody, but it's true, because I like hockey. I don't like any other sport, but I love hockey.
Yeah,
and that's what analysts do. They, you know, if so-and-so had a bad game last night, they break it down, they tear it down, where they did wrong. So these people are used to that. They're not used to, you know what I mean? They're not used to keeping all those factors into effect, because most people that they are judging are making $5-6 million a year, and you're right. They should not be able to, you know, have a human bad game, you know, when they're making that much money.
Yeah.
So they can't get out of that mindset when they go see someone standing there by themselves or a few people trying to, you know, get the same message across, but with their art and their voice and their sound, you know. So it's so different. It's such a different, like I said, you almost have to at least know one musician who has struggled a little bit, or who has, you know, pounded the pavement for 10 years or 5 years or 2 years or 1 year, whatever, to even begin to understand, because it's a different mentality, art versus sports. And a lot of people try and have the same view and the same take one for the other, and it's so different.
Well, yeah, with now, a sport, you can't say, oh, they had a really good show. Well, did they win or did they lose? That's all that matters, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's, and how did they perform? You know, like it's all about, it's a results-driven mentality, you know, and a lot of people, they take that with their life too. It's like, you know, what car do I drive? How many points is this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, it's all about results, it's all about numbers, you know. And again, I'm stereotyping so bad. You know, but I'm just,
it's a predominant thing of this show, I think, from time to time, especially my first season. There was, I do joke about the sports people, maybe a little bit too much, and I feign ignorance to what sports are, but I do know sports. I kind of joke that I don't know the difference between stick ball, as I call it, and pig ball. I do know sports, and I have played sports, but I always like playing. Like, I used to play baseball all the time, and I like playing a game and having some good moments in the game. And it wasn't so much about the victory as I had some good moments in the game, and I saw some improvement in my technique, and it was more about that. And when I play music, like at practice tonight, it was like, oh, like we kind of changed how we did that part a little bit there, and it kind of sounds, it has a bit more oomph to it, or. And it's just about improving and making it feel better, as opposed to just, I don't know. I don't understand scoring points. I don't. And the other joke I make on the show all the time, which is, and I do this on Facebook all the time, and it really pisses a lot of people off, but I'll share it with you, is everyone will be on the internet and go, oh, my God, that game last night was so awesome. And the night before, I was running a Dungeons & Dragons game. So I go online, I go, thanks, I didn't know you guys cared about my game, but you know, the wizard really threw that fireball really good and knocked that dragon out. I usually do that. Like, I respond to people in that way.
Well, like, and because
it was the big game.
It's a different thought process. Again, you can be really stereotypical and go hard left and hard right.
Yep.
And, you know, there's people that navigate an amazing course right down the middle, you know, they embrace both, you know, but it was just funny how you laid that out, and it just sounded like someone breaking down last night's game, versus, you know, wow, I can't believe that, you know, she's up there by herself. Let's just say it was a solo show, you know, and she doesn't know anybody here, and there's no hype, there's no pre-game show, there's no stats sheet that I can check out before I get there. You know, I just walked in, and you know, it takes a lot of guts to do that. You know,
oh, for sure. It does.
And generally, those kind of people wouldn't do something like that. So it's so foreign to them, just as it is if you were to go to an NFL game. You know, that whole culture is so different. You know, like I can't get into it. I don't get it. I don't really about all that kind of, you know, WWE type of sports, you know, like the, everyone's different, and, you know, it makes it hard, because the thing is it's easier to push mass, entertainment like sports, versus art and culture and that sort of stuff, because the way the world is being kind of pulled nowadays, they're not really there's no money in art. So why would we want these people to get into that? You know, let's get them into friggin' American Idol or whatever, you know, because that's where the money is now.
Yeah.
So the funny thing about all that is that right now, this is across Canada. I'm sure it's the same, you know, in the U.S. as well. But across Canada, guitar lessons and guitar sales and guitar students and players are down.
Oh.
All-time low. All-time low. But vocal lessons and piano lessons are at an all-time high.
Really?
And it all has to do with the American Idol phenomena. Basically,
sure.
Karaoke, right? You're singing along to a track. You're singing along to a piano track, right? So, you know, I know countless guitar players that had waiting lists, you know, they were full and they had people waiting for whenever they had someone. And now it's like, you know, they're hassled. And it's just guitar has lost its appeal in the main sound of music, but in the principal, voice of mainstream music. It's more of a pad now. It's like a keyboard is. Okay,
yeah.
We're going to bring that guitar up to do some chords, and then we'll bring it back down. You know, like,
yep.
You rarely hear a pumping guitar track.
No,
the
not anymore,
track
no.
From start to back. You know?
Unless it's the Foo Fighters. Like, somehow they're still
yeah.
Somehow carrying the torch. They're like the only
Absolutely.
Band that's still
unless
people
it's
listen
grinding
to.
Rock and roll, you know. But
yeah.
You would have never had a studio session 20 years ago in pop music and in any kind of music without a guitar.
Well, yeah, it was impossible.
Know? Where now it'd be like guitar player's late. Oh, fucked out him.
Yeah.
You know, we really don't need him.
Yeah,
know,
we'll
like,
just we'll do that section on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Or,
where the guitar was the engine before, and again, it's evolution. You know, I'm so biased because I'm a guitar player and I'm a guitar
sure.
fanatic. Everything I do is about guitar, whether it's fixing, whether it's
the
design, everything. Anyway, so for me, it's kind of sad, but I also, you know, eventually you just have to live. It's evolution, you know.
It's just not on the guitar side too, because I, like from a drummer's perspective, what I notice is if you listen to any song. And you listen to the quote-unquote drums, it's always a drum machine, right?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's always or pre-programmed.
Stems now they do too, right? They'll actually record a real drum track and just keep looping it.
Yeah. And it's the same beat from beginning to end.
It's the same beat, same kit, it's the same. You can change the sounds of the kit, but it's the same, you know, like, it's become so, you know, so still.
But just, like with the other thing though is with like EDM, like electronic dance music, which I like, which I shouldn't as a musician, I shouldn't, but whatever. But they're not even using drum samples anymore. Like they're using, you know, it's like boom, 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 and it's like maybe someone like knocking on a window or something. And they
absolutely.
Mic it and then they create the whole drum sound off of that, and they just, you know, saturate the sound of it to make it sound like something else, or they just take a bass line and they make it sound like, but it's not an actual drum sound, like not even close anymore. And I'm seeing that like on the radio too. It's like they're getting away from guitar, but they're getting away from drums too. And then bass lines are keyboard, like they've been keyboard for a while now. And it's just, you know, some keyboard setting. It's not even a bass keyboard setting. It's just a keyboard setting that has a lower tone. And that's it. Like, I don't know. Like, we're falling behind, man. You and me.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then, you know, the only organic thing on there is the vocal track, but then you're processing it through auto-tune and a bunch of other stuff. So you're losing every human element possible into this creation of music. You know, and it drops the name of creation and just becomes manufacturing. You know, they're just manufacturing music in there.
But then I heard that they also have, I don't know if it's an algorithm or something, along the lines of, we know that this particular type of beat at a certain beats per minute will elicit someone to maybe want to go buy something or whatever. So they craft it that way, and then, you know, this twiggle sound is a wah, 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 or whatever. You know, it meets the exact parameter we're looking for, And they run this algorithm, and they know exactly what sorts of sounds to have in there, what beat to have, where to place the chorus. Like maybe a chorus needs to be three lines instead of four lines, or whatever. And they've broken it down to a marketable algorithm that allows them to, for the song to be just the right length, so they can put another ad in, or that sort of thing. Like it's, I don't know. I've heard that. I don't know if it's true or not, but.
Oh yeah, for sure. They have, what do they call those? And they have like when you sit down, there's like a market research of some sort, like a
Yeah.
they have like 12 people that sit down in a room, and then they like, so they do that for music. There's it's not a coincidence that G C D are the most common chord arrangements, because it's familiar and it triggers familiarity,
Yep.
and they know any time they can slew a song together with G C D as far as chords. And that's one and two and three and four drum beat, right there you have the battle.
Because it's
It's a true
familiar too,
thing.
right? Like, oh.
Exactly. And I mean, like, it's not like that hasn't been going on. There's only so many chords, there's only so many arrangements that you can do without running into something that's been done. That's different. Did Nikki Sixx realize that Kickstart My Heart is the verse of Rock and Roll High School from the Ramones, and the chorus is Shoot the Thrill? I'm not sure if he realized that. He felt that it was familiar and felt good. So that's different, But specifically targeting, how can I just follow a formula and a recipe to make myself rich? That's what we're really at right now, as far as music. It has nothing to do with artistic control, or sorry, with artistic expression. It has nothing to do with, back in the day, they would give, they'd sign someone to five records, and they knew that the first one, well, they'd just be trying to find their way, and the second one, they should be charting, and the third, that should be the one.
Yeah, that's right. That was the old studio formula they had back in the day.
Exactly. They worked that out. They knew that was the investment. That was the, and now, like, they're going back to, which is funny, because I predicted this years ago. They're going back to what they were doing in the 50s and 60s, singles. They're just doing, okay, give us your three best songs, and we'll see where it goes from there. Without any kind of, like, an album used to tell a story before. It used to, your first song was the first song for a reason, and you ended
Yeah, exactly.
for a reason with your last song, and what was in between, I'm sure that's been forgotten so long ago. Mainstream, of course, there's always people that are going to be still attached to the old art of the way it used to be, still wanting to do full albums because it tells a story with art work and good lyrics and storytelling lyrics. But they're doing it all on their own dime. They're doing it because they want to. They're doing it because, they don't know any other way. It's not because it's the way, it's just the way they want to do it. But again, because, I get a, I used to get upset about it, I used to get depressed about it, but I've kind of gotten that point. Maybe I'm getting older, but it's evolution. People were saying that in the 60s about certain stuff, people have been saying that in the 70s about certain stuff. In the 90s, it was a terrible crash, rock and roll's dead, grunge is in. Now we look back at it, it saved us from all that hair metal. It was a great cleanser.
It was, yeah.
And great raunchy guitar tones. Drummers actually became really good in the 90s. Like, a lot of my favorite drummers are from the 90s, because groove was
Oh,
back into
yeah.
it and feel was back into it, as
Yep.
opposed to massive reverb, arena soaked, rototom runs all the
Oh,
time. You know what I
God.
mean? So
Yeah.
looking, I'm trying to be not as negative about it. It is what it is. I was lucky enough to live when I did, and grasp and take in whatever I could, during the good years. Because if I was young now,
Oh, yeah.
and I'd be looking back on all the good stuff that happened over the last 60 years, and you look at what you have to look forward to now as a musician, it's I would really be like, oh man, I wish I would have grew up in the 80s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I was always saying, I wish I would grew up in the 60s, because I thought the 60s were better, but really, yeah. I'm glad I was able to take the whole thing in. I was able to get the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s and, you know, 2000s is where it kind of drops off a little bit as far as I'm concerned. But
it's always greener on the other side, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
but,
totally.
But I, like, here's like, I've had this argument with Tracy on the show before. And what I think, though, is I don't think the music industry is as dead as we think it is. It's just the way that music works now is not the same model as before. But I'm seeing a lot of indie bands make a living doing what they're doing, and they're touring, but they're not signing to a label. They create their own labels, so they have the publishing rights, so they own their music 100%. They're using the CDs to sell tickets to their shows, and they're touring like all the time. Like, you look at the Reverend Horton Heat. He's been, he's coming here in March, and he's still touring and he's still making money, but he's still doing it his way. But you can use the internet to your advantage because it's easier to reach your audience. And if you're not going to reach the same audience. But like when Prince went off on his own and quit his label and everything, he sold far less copies of his albums, but he made like triple the amount of money.
Absolutely.
Because he said, you know, I can't remember exactly what the numbers were. You can criticize me if I get the math wrong, but something like if he sold 100,000 copies of an album, which isn't even gold status, right? I think 500 grand is gold status in the States. So you could sell 100 grand, and he made more money selling 100,000 albums independently than when he sold 10 million albums of Diamonds and Pearls.
And I'm not saying that it's just different, but I think the big difference is you are 100% right. You have, as an artist now, you don't need to be signed to go out and do stuff. You don't need to be signed to go out and tour. You don't need to be signed to put out a record. But the disadvantage is everyone has that advantage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So everyone is on the same level. So the way I see it now is before you couldn't do anything without a record label.
Yeah.
But if you had one, you stood a chance, and that was the carrot. Course, you stood a chance to be a star. You stood a chance to make enough money that you would never have to do anything except for just do what you wanted to do, play guitar, go on the road, record, whatever you wanted. Now that option's kind of gone. Yeah. But you have a chance now. So before, you would try it and it's not working out, or you would get signed and you would get dropped. And then, okay, well, I'm going to go work at the factory, because I've already had it, it's come and gone.
Yeah.
Or it never came.
The story of Anvil right there. But yeah, go on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Where now you can be a blue collar musician. You can run the show yourself. You can make a decent living. You can control when you're playing, where you're playing, with who. You're not, you know, you can call the band you're playing with, where before you'd have to call their manager.
Yeah.
Back, and then the record label would find out, and you know, so it's a lot less, there's a lot less red tape, there's a lot less bullshit involved. The carrot isn't as big, but it's a bigger picture. There's more carrots, you know, it's carrots for life as opposed to that one golden carrot, you know. So yeah, you're totally right. I know, you know, Rami Mays, like I see her Facebook posts all the time, and sometimes she wants to quit and sometimes she doesn't, and she's at that point, you know, where it's like, how long can I keep going? Because I'm never going to get rich doing this from the looks of it.
Yeah.
But what else would I do, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it. I think I'm fortunate enough that I've placed myself in a good enough spot with what I've done with my life to be able to still make good money doing what I do. I know I'll never be rich doing it, but at least I know that I can still put food on the table, and I can still, be happy with what I do for a living, you know. So it's kind of and maybe that's a good thing. There's less people, you know, joining bands and starting bands just to meet chicks and just to be popular.
Yeah, they're doing it for the music.
they know there's no chance, probably, that there's, you know, or there's a very slim chance. There's always a chance, I guess, but there's a way less chance that they are going to be world phenomena and they're going to make Uber amounts of millions of dollars and have a four-year career and then just live off of royalties for the rest of it. Those days are gone. But that's a good thing. Because,
oh, I think so too.
You know, you're seeing old bands now go out on the road because they have to earn their money. The record, you know, the royalties aren't coming in to pay for their mansion. They got to go tour now. There's so many bands that played in Moncton that never would have played there before.
Oh, no kidding.
Or in small towns everywhere, small town Alberta, small town Manitoba, because they need to hit the streets to make money, and that's good. They're earning their money again. And that's why I try to not be negative about it. It's just, it's different. And when you've been involved in something, when it's been a certain way for so long, and you visualize something and it changes, you're like, hey, what's going on? You know, but, ever since I've tried to put a positive spin on it, it's just what it is.
Yep.
And same thing. I see myself when I get older, I'll be one of the guys that, you know, that played during all those years and I'm still playing and, you know, maybe I'll be a little bit of I don't know. It's just, it's kind of weird because when you're living it, you never know how it's going to be. Just as you know, right now,
yeah.
You're going to look back at what's going on with Dome and you're going to be like, man, I remember that. And
that's,
I remember
so
thinking,
cool.
I was thinking, but even the way you were thinking about certain things, the way even just how we chatted about that contest, you know,
yeah.
How your thoughts, you know, now versus then. So it's an interesting, interesting life. It's an interesting career. It's an interesting hobby, passion, I wouldn't change it for the world. And I'm just happy that I was able to do it when I did it, during the years I did it, and then I'm still doing it. You know?
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap it up here with one more thought. So bucket list items. So name me your bucket list item, musically speaking, that you'd still like to do. Like a show you want to see, someone you want to play with, a venue you want to play that you haven't played before. Like, what would that be? Because I have a bucket list. I always have
probably
a bucket list. I want to see what you got.
Well, I've always been a fan of live music, and you know, my thing when we were younger. Again, this is pre. Every band touring because they have to, you know, we had to drive to Toronto, Boston, Montreal,
oh, yeah.
Anything, you know, yep. Nobody would go to Moncton, you know, when Kiss announced they were coming to Moncton, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, my mind was blown. So I've seen almost everyone. Tom Petty was actually the last guy on my bucket that I missed. I was quite choked about that. But as far as bands, Stray Cats would be the only one that's really on the top. But I've seen Stetzer, with the big bands. But I'm in the process of planning one of my bucket list things, and I'm going to do a solo record.
Yay.
But I'm going to do it in. I'm going to try as much as I can. I'm playing how it's going to work now, but to do as much as I can with people that I've played with. Almost like a story of my life so far with music, but all new material.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All new material, stuff I've had sitting around, stuff I've been working on, stuff I've never used. Like when you were saying, do you have all that? Do you have anything on demos and stuff? It's all up here. It's all in my brain. I still have Thunderfunk demos in my brain that were never recorded.
Okay, that's awesome.
So I have all this stuff that I've, you know, never used or been working on new stuff. So that's kind of one thing I want to do. And I think that's honestly a good, I think I'd be very proud of that. I think it's really neat because I've known a lot of the same musicians and played with them for a long time. So it'd be kind of neat to go, hey, you know, we got together when we were 15 and we're 45 now. And then once I have that basis.
25. We're 25.
And then after that, once I get that basis, then again, try and maybe get some family, but still make it where it's not just for the sake of doing it. You know, I still want it to be good. If it's not good, I don't want to do it.
No, you're doing it. Yeah. Passion project.
Absolutely. You know, And I'm not one of those kind of people that's going to, like, you know, try and, I'm not going to try and tour with it. I'm not going to, you know, I just want to do it just to do it. And the nice thing now is you can just put it online. If you don't want to listen, let's do it. And if you don't, that's just fine. You know, you're not, it's not an ego shot because you only sold 25 CDs or whatever, right? Yeah. So honestly, that's probably my bucket list, you know.
I like that.
I always wanted to tour, do a guitar checking gig, but I didn't want to start from the beginning playing with punk bands or rock bands, and you're on the couch and you're making $50 a night, and not interested in that. I wanted to do it with a good sized band and one that was already established and one that, you know, that I respected. Yeah. But I mean, you don't walk into those gigs. I mean, usually you have to start from the bottom and build your way up and go through all that. So, the Big Sugar gig is honestly, that's one of my bucket lists I'm actually doing right now, which is amazing. You know, I've been extremely fortunate. I've done almost everything I've wanted to do, you know, to a certain level, you know. Would I have liked to have gone on massive world tours? Absolutely. But I've gone on tour for 6 weeks multiple times.
Yeah.
It's the same idea, you know, recording in studios, collecting guitars, working on guitars. I'm kind of doing exactly what I always hoped that I would be able to do. You never know how it's going to turn out, but.
And that's the sign of success, actually, to be honest. It's not making the big bucks, or it's you actually had the opportunity to do all the things you like to do, and you're still making new opportunities all the time, and you're still doing those opportunities. Like, that's success,
absolutely.
Man. Like, my successes are small. Like, I've got my family, I love my wife, I got my two kids.
But that's not small.
But no, that's a thing. It's viewed as small, but for me, dude, I'm so freaking happy. It's like, oh, it'd be nice if we had more money. We could pay this off. Or who cares? You know, like I live in the now. I didn't before. But the kids make me live in the now and count my blessings. Like it's mm-hmm. awesome.
Well, the thing is too, is every time you say that, you have to realize that there'd be a trade-off. Like, you know, as you can imagine, I've had tons of sacrifices in my life in order to be able to make myself available to do what I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of times I said, man, I wish I had more money, or I wish I had a regular job. I said, yeah, but if you do that, then you're taking that away.
Yeah.
So it's fine. You can make more money, but take away playing 5 nights a week, or take away, you know, whatever, you know, like, you know. So it's, I feel bad for people that live that way because, and everybody does it. Everyone has that. Oh, I wish, you know, I wish my life was a little different this way. But when you really realize for that to happen, you'd have to take out another piece of your puzzle.
Yeah.
And your life wouldn't be the same. Right. Are you going to be any happier? Probably not, you know.
Good philosophy. I was going to say
the
good,
only way to look at
I was going
to
say good falafel, but. you take your victories where you can, and you really got to count your blessings. Like, I get for bucket list items. Yeah. There's still a couple bands I still want to see. And there's only two bands on my bucket list that I still want to see that I haven't seen, believe it or not. That would be, I still want to see Radiohead. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm a pretty big Radiohead fan. I know it doesn't jive with the kind of music that I genuinely like, but I've always liked Radiohead. And I still want to see the Bullet Boys.
Really? Are they even still around?
Yes. Their last three albums are 1,000 times better than anything they ever put out in the 90s. Leaps and bounds better. Yes. Still, they're actually relevant now. They weren't relevant back in the 90s. And I kind of liked them in the 90s. And then, you know, it kind of fell off, and then I kind of went back, and I can't remember why. They put an album out called Sophie, and I listened to that. Like, this is like 1,000 times better than anything they did before. But they actually kept up with the music business and kept up with, you know, being relevant. Like, they still have that kind of some of that original sound, but it's way more mature, way more diverse. Like, they're way better now. Like, I try to push Bullet Boys down everyone's throat as much as I can.
All right, check out the new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth checking out. And actually, they did so well. Like, the last album, they was one of the highest rated albums of the year. I think it was last year, the year before. That actually a record label came and found them and said, we're putting you on our label. even though they'd been doing indie label stuff for the last, you know, 15 years. But the strength of the album was that strong that now they're being, you know, all the record labels are going to them now again. So it's kind of cool. And then, but that's the concert list. On the other side of the bucket list, there's people I still want to play with. And I'm not like everyone else. Like when I say I want to play on stage with somebody, my dream person to play on stage with has always been my brother. And I get to do that. And it's pretty freaking cool. Like that, when I was a kid, it was like Eddie Van Halen or Todd. I'd pick Todd every time.
Of course.
Like, you know, I don't care if it's not cool or not, but it is to me. And to play with my dad, that was one of my dreams, so I got to do that. Playing with my mom is still on that list. And then there's two other people on that list. You and I have never jammed together, which is
that's true, actually. Is
the stupidest thing that we haven't. Because it's, but I mean, it's circumstance. You live where you live, and I live where I live.
Yeah, that's true.
And my buddy Charles Melanson from Shediacre, he lives in Moncton now. Those are the two people on my bucket list, along with my mom, that I want to play with in some way, shape, or form, even if it's just in the studio or just screwing around in the basement or whatever. That's on my bucket list, and I'm going to knock all three of those off somehow.
Well, you know, you're the one with me is definitely something that's absolutely possible. We don't live that far from each other.
No, so not really.
It's just planning, and that'd be a thrill. I'd love to.
Yeah. But, yeah, Todd wants to do that, too. We're actually setting up jam space in Todd's basement.
Oh, nice.
So if you come this way, there is a spot. But if we go that way, is there a spot? Do you have a jam
Absolutely.
Spot?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Okay.
Fully equipped.
Do you have drums out there already?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Then I could just play.
You full setup.
Nice. Okay, well, we're going to knock that one off. The mom
you
thing.
Have to be okay with a, you have to be okay with the 24-inch kick, though.
That's fine. I'll work on a 24-inch kick. I'll work on a 12-inch kick. But yeah, that'd be cool. That's I'm trying to. I still want a studio in my home. That's kind of the big thing I want to do. But I'm gonna let the kids get a little older and then build my studio. I'm gonna get an electronic kit and then I'm all set to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So okay, I'm gonna cap it off there. It's actually really. Oh wow, it's actually pretty late over here. And this is fun. I'm probably gonna segment this into maybe two episodes or three episodes or something, but it was just fun, man. This is super fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So fun. I'm so glad that you asked me to do that.
Yeah. So I want to do it again, though, for sure.
Yes. Anytime.
Do you want to try doing a three-way with Todd?
Sure.
Okay. I'll see how we can finagle that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. It's possible.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, man. Love you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
Love you, too.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.